This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, the NBA had three playoff games yesterday, and two of them had saw the series evened up at a game apiece. We saw Phoenix and the Cleveland Cavaliers winning at home. We saw Boston winning at home, too, and now they're up 2-0 on the Atlanta Hawks. There's some more basketball games to be played tonight, including LeBron James and the Lakers taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is dealing with a lower back contusion, and the Milwaukee Bucks taking on the Miami Heat, who took game one of that series against the number one team in the East. There's a lot of cool storylines to the NBA. However, the big story came late last night, because Draymond Green has been suspended for Thursday's Game 3 in San Francisco, as Golden State will be hosting that game down 0-2 to the Sacramento Kings. And they're suspending him for that game because he stepped on Domantas Sabonis in Game 2. And he did so because Sabonis grabbed his ankle, and he was fed up with that, but he still stomped him, enough to get an ejection from the game. Now, that ejection brought about the sort of fun nature of Draymond Green, and no other way to put it, when he sort of reacted to the crowd and jumped up on this chair and trying to make this more of a circus than it was. And the person that was in attendance of that game on Monday night was Adam Silver, the commissioner. And he was there. And he saw it. And he's been suspended for the game. Now, I said yesterday that I didn't think the NBA would suspend Draymond Green for this. It didn't look like a suspendable action, given the nature of the fact that Sabonis got a technical for grabbing the ankle of Draymond Green. And you could almost say, all right, guys, we're going to give you both warnings here. Chill, cool it. Let's stop reacting to one another physically like this. But Draymond Green got suspended not because he stomped on Domantas Sabonis. He got suspended because he's Draymond Green. He got suspended because it feels like every time there's a playoff and every time there's Golden State in the playoffs, at some point Draymond Green does what he does, right? Whether it's taking out a Memphis Grizzly or bumping around with the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2016, a number of other incidents that Draymond Green has had. Now, Green is a smart guy, and he knows that the NBA is going to be targeting him. And he does these things anyway. And his reputation was what got him this game suspension. Then it's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than just being out for game three. This season, Draymond Green started by getting in a fight with Jordan Poole. Remember that in the preseason training video? Remember the videographer that got in trouble for releasing that video in the first place, just before the season started? And now it could end with him stomping another player and getting suspended in a key game that Golden State is going to need if they're going to stay alive in this series. The Golden State Warriors can't seem to win on the road. They didn't have the playoff switch we thought that they would have in the first two games in Sacramento. That maybe, just maybe, it was a mirage all along. That maybe this was a team that just didn't really want to play 82 basketball games in the regular season. Didn't really seem to care. Maybe give the hometown crowd something to cheer for, but in the end, where are we? Cleveland, Atlanta, Phoenix? We don't even know where we are. But maybe it was all a mirage that in the end, when you get to the playoffs, the defending champions would show up. The defending champions would be the team we always thought that they were. Maybe we just didn't get it in the 82 games of the 2022-23 season. But that wasn't true. That wasn't true. They're looking slower than the Sacramento Kings team. This is a better team than them. And they've got to win on Thursday night because they're not winning on the road. And if Sacramento gets game three and they're up 3-0, you're going to be asking this team to win 2 times on the road in a very short span. And it doesn't look like they're capable of doing it. And you could point to everything on paper, but they have not done that this year. And Draymond Green is out. Now look, Golden State has had a dynastic run. Even when they disappeared for a brief period of time, they came back last season and won it again. They've got 4 championships. But they're expensive. And Draymond Green is one of the reasons they're expensive. And they're going to start cutting some costs.
It's one of the reasons why they've been asked over and over again, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, about this being like the Last Dance, when the Chicago Bulls knew that they weren't going to be all together again. There was going to be some changes coming down the pipe. There is something about that with this Golden State Warriors team that's coming. They spend a lot of money on the luxury tax. Now, Draymond Green may be out looking for a long-term deal he may not get. Now, he has an option to return to the Warriors next season. But like we talk about in the NFL with the franchise tag, who wants to play on that when there's no security on the back end? Draymond Green is not going to get a long-term deal with Golden State. So it is very likely that he is not going to come back to option into a one-year situation and then get it with next year. He has no security coming back. He's 33 years old. There is another contract waiting for him somewhere in the NBA. He's that good of a player. He's that good of a defender. He has not been contributing offensively, but he is one of the top defenders in the NBA. Golden State's going to need him, even if they're playing in the comfortable confines of the Chase Center. They still are going to need Draymond Green defensively in this series against Sacramento. And they're not going to have him for a critical Game 3 on Thursday night. But Draymond Green's defense and his wit and his ball smarts are going to result in a contract from somebody. Despite some of these crazy antics that we get in the postseason from him. He's that well-respected. But he's not going to get it from Golden State, who are going to start cutting back. They don't want to keep paying in the luxury tax, even if it is meant championships, because championships aren't guaranteed. So Draymond Green's last acts as a Golden State Warrior, despite helping this team win four championships, is stomping on Domantas Sabonis, and it could result in a first-round exit to a team that has not been in the playoffs in forever. Now, I don't think that the NBA acted right in this situation. I don't think he deserves a full-game suspension, but I absolutely understand why they did it. I just don't agree with it. I don't think it's outlandish. I don't think it's outrageous. I don't think it's injustice. I don't think any of that stuff. I think that they can sell me the Draymond Green has done this many times and his reputation is warranted in this situation to give him a suspension. I can buy that. I just wouldn't have done it if I was Adam Silver, even if I was standing up angry and bitter and really fighting back my rage, watching him react to that ejection. I don't want my NBA to be turned into a circus. I don't want my NBA to be turned into this sort of fun yelling at the crowd. The crowd's yelling at me. Now, Tony D, the talk show host, likes that. Tony D, the talk show host, I kind of enjoy it. I think it adds character. I think it adds a little flavor. It's not something I'd teach my little kids as they were growing up to do. But I kind of enjoy it. It adds something. But if I was the commissioner and I was wearing that hat, I wouldn't want that. To be honest with you, if I was telling my wife privately, you know, it was actually kind of fun. Yeah, he's like, it was actually kind of fun. It was actually kind of neat. You know, I would still never admit to anybody on the board or anybody publicly that I would condone that kind of behavior. Of course, I wouldn't condone that kind of behavior. It actually is kind of dangerous, to be honest with you. Right? I mean, you don't know where that's going to go. You can have security on the scene, but you know how crowds can get. With the mob mentality, we're almost seeing it on a daily basis. Go to TikTok. There's always somebody blowing up on something. And when the crowd gets into it, they don't have some sort of moral compass. So you don't know what you could be inciting when you are giving it back to a crowd that's had maybe a few beers and are ready to come at you. But I still wouldn't have suspended him for that. The other problem, though, is Draymond Green doesn't understand sometimes who Draymond Green is, and he's a really, really smart guy. I mean, Draymond Green can talk about everything. He can talk about all sorts of things, basketball, non-basketball. He's very well-rounded. And I wonder, does he have an understanding of who he is? Did he really believe that he had earned enough credibility in that moment to stand in the press conference or sit in the press conference, speak to the media, and defend himself in a way that would make the NBA say, "Oh, you know what? You're right. All good. Sorry, our bad." No, he doesn't have it. He should know that. Always know where you stand. Always read the tea leaves. Always understand when you're in a situation, where your opponent, if you want to just kind of call it that, thinks of you. In this case, Draymond Green underestimated the NBA's view of him, image of him. He's a problem in the postseason. He's an issue in the playoffs. He's done this before. He's continuing to do it. When you think he's learned a lesson with this suspension, he comes back the next year and does it again. He comes back the next year and does it again. Now he's come back the next year and did it again. And Draymond Green thought, I could just tell about how I got my ankle held, and I've got my ankle held twice, and nobody called this. And everyone would go, oh, you know what? You're right. He didn't understand that the NBA is not suspending him for this. They are suspending him for who he is. And when you have, if you have some sort of advanced knowledge of that, you would think that you couldn't talk your way out of a particular foul, particular circumstance. Like I said, I wouldn't suspend him, but I understand why they did it. Again, I'm not outraged by it, and I know some people are. I know some people think this is some sort of picking on Draymond moment. I think if you're a Golden State Warriors fan, I think you could make the argument. Sabonis isn't guilty either. He got a technical for grabbing the leg. He's not an innocent victim in all this. He got hurt, and that needed to be dealt with. I don't think a suspension was warranted, but Draymond being Draymond is enough for the NBA to do it.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony
D. Thanks for joining us. We continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Again, Draymond Green suspended for Thursday's Game 3 in San Francisco. Your thoughts on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. But like I said earlier, three games last night. One went the way it should have gone and should always go. The Atlanta Hawks, a fine young basketball team. Trae Young is one of the most more exciting players to watch but Atlanta, they're just not Boston good. And again, last night the Celtics took them down by 13 points, winning 119-106. They lead 2-0. They've beaten Atlanta 5 times this season, 3 in the regular season and now 2 in the playoffs. This should be a sweep. Atlanta might squeeze one out in the next 2 games, but this is not a series to hold much of your attention. But there are other 2 series good, and one should, between the Clippers and the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix got back on track last night, winning 123-106. Good game last night from Devin Booker. Good game from Kevin Durant. One of the keys last night to the game was Phoenix hits mid-range jumpers better than any team in the NBA. That shot that is not in the paint but it's not the three-point line, Phoenix did a really good job of that, and they always do a good job of that. And they let that shine last night in their game against the Clippers. But I think if you're the Clippers, this is a 5-4 series. So this is a 4-5 series. So it's not like one team is a complete underdog to the other. Although you could make the case, because the Clippers are playing without Paul George and the Suns are a 4 seed playing 8 games with Kevin Durant in the lineup, that if they had Kevin Durant for 82 games, they'd probably not be a 4 seed. So you could say, based on the talent that's available to both of these teams, this is not as tight as the seedings indicate. And you would be right, right? So the Clippers are not quite even with the Suns based on seeding, because the Suns have Kevin Durant now and only had 8 games with them during the regular season due to injury and whatnot. But still, if you're the Clippers, you got what you wanted out of the first 2 games of this series. You got a game. You got home court back in your favor. Now, right now, who knows what that means. I mean, the Suns may have found something together and got Kevin Durant more involved. Remember, in Game 1, Durant went the final 7 minutes of the game with 1 field goal attempt. They somehow shut Kevin Durant out from even participating offensively in the final 7 minutes of the game. So, but last night it was a complete, Phoenix was able to just continue on, win this game. And the Cleveland Cavaliers got back on track with a very resounding victory against the New York Knicks. And that game wasn't even competitive. I mean, that game was double digits leads for Cleveland pretty much throughout the game. And they go on to even up that series. But like the Clippers, the Knicks got what they wanted out of this too. This is also a 4-5 matchup. And the Knicks got game one. So this is, again, a split series that'll be heading back to the Madison Square. They'll be heading to Madison Square Garden for game three on Friday. I think, yeah, they play Friday. So I was wondering if it's Saturday or Friday. But game three will be at Madison Square Garden and the Knicks getting a split on the road. But other than that, I think the big story last night was the Draymond Green suspension that didn't come down until, I think, 11:30, maybe 10:30 last night, our time. It came around late. But Draymond Green getting suspended for the game. It will be interesting to see if this affects Golden State in a way that they lose game three and they end up getting an exit out of the first round of the playoffs. It is going to start signaling a different look for Golden State. Like I was saying earlier, Draymond Green is likely not to take the option to be back on on the Warriors, because even though he may love the Bay Area, he may love playing with Steph and Clay, he may love Steve Kerr, he's not playing 1 year with no guarantee. He's not going to do that. He's 33 years old. He's going to play where they give him another long-term deal. Long-term, nice, guaranteed money. That's how the NBA contracts work. He's not likely to, on principle, try to keep the band together. That's just not a smart business sense. So the Warriors are not going to offer him a long-term deal. They are cost-cutting. So that's not coming. It's unlikely. It's not impossible, but it's unlikely he's taken the one-year option, and now he's going to be off to some team that gives him a nice five-year deal worth whatever it is and, you know, finishing out his career.
Which begs the question, what's a good fit for him?
I mean,
he's almost like this generation's Dennis Rodman.
Well, yeah, he's a very, very good player.
Oh, no, I'm not. Yeah, and so is Rodman.
Like Rodman, but
what I'm saying is it's almost like the he's taking on the villain role.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because you know if you're getting him, you know if you're getting him, it's like every team that ever took Rodman in, you know you were getting someone who was going to play 110% night in and night out. But you also knew there's going to be all these off the court extracurricular. For Draymond, it's always on the court.
I would say it's more on the court.
Yeah.
Like
he's not a distraction in the locker room, like, except for getting suspended.
He's got a couple of incidents that would be eye opening. The fighting with Jordan Poole at the beginning of the season, it was totally uncalled for. What are you so riled up about in a September preseason workout? Like, what is making you go to that place where you punch a teammate?
Just a tense 110% all the time, Tony.
That's just crazy. But yeah, he's not in a dress on a motorcycle promoting a book.
No, right. Like,
he's not doing those things.
Not dating Madonna or marrying Madonna or whatever it was that he did with Madonna.
And this is the analysis of Draymond Green that was coming out yesterday before we knew he was suspended was, and I think this is interesting, these things that Draymond does, right? It was put best by, I think Tony Kornheiser said this yesterday. They come at the blessing of Steve Kerr and his teammates. They want him to be this physical and this aggressive. They want him to be a dangerous player out there. And even if it costs them an ejection or two, they want him to be close to the line because that's how he energizes the team. Now, granted, I don't think Steve Kerr is looking for him to get ejected and suspended. But they want him to take it as close to the edge as possible. Now, I don't know if other coaches around the NBA would be comfortable with that. But the Golden State Warriors over the years have been comfortable with that from Draymond Green. But he's one of the top defenders in the league, I think. So I would want him on my team. First of all, I would want him on my team if I was like, or the Orlando Magic. And I don't think he'll go to the Orlando Magic. And here's why. But let's hypothetically say Orlando going after him. Because if he's getting trouble in the playoffs, it means I'm in the playoffs. Like, if that's the only time Draymond Green is going to be a problem for me, then the situation is good for me. Like, at least I'm in a postseason matchup that he could cause me a headache. Now, would I want him if I were the Knicks and I'm in the playoffs and I've got a really good team and a dynamic team that I think could be really strongly built with other pieces where, hey, I was a five seed, but I think we can even do better in the next few years. I don't know if I'm Tom Thibodeau, I want a Draymond Green on my team, but I honestly could see a number. Like I might want him if I was the New Orleans Pelicans. I might want him if I'm Oklahoma City. I might want him if I'm the Chicago Bulls. Like somebody that is, who brings it constantly and whose problems seem to only come in the bright lights of the postseason that I continue to avoid because of the way my team is built. So that's kind of where I'd see it. If I was a team that had a strong core that may be missing a piece or two, I don't know if I'd dabble in that. But I'd probably find my piece somewhere else, but I'd be curious to see this off season. If he opts out of that final year for Golden State and says, yeah, hey, this, you guys want me gone and I want a long-term deal, what the summer is going to look like for him. But like I said, I wasn't surprised he got suspended. I just wouldn't have suspended him. But I wonder how much do you think he was suspended because Adam Silver was in the building?
I think he would have gotten a one-game suspension anyway, just because there was, you know, even if Adam Silver wasn't in the building, I'm not saying they're trying to make, it's just something you can't do.
I think there would be no suspension.
If Adam Silver wasn't in the building?
No, I think if another player had stomped on Sabonis and Sabonis had grabbed the ankle and both would have gotten technicals and then the ejection, I think it would have been the end of the story.
I don't know.
I think if Jordan Poole did stomp, suspension.
The stomp seems very deliberate.
They put it in the press release that he was suspended for who he is. They put it in the press release last night that said, due to past actions, that they could not ignore past actions. So it makes you ask the question, well, if you suffer a penalty and you serve your time, do they still hold this stuff against you on every incident? I don't know.
That's where, you know, we talked about at the beginning where Draymond may have a hard time finding another team because that's going to be carried with him.
Maybe. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Brian Barrett's going to join us this hour to talk Celtics.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
15 minutes, Brian Barrett is going to join us. We're going to talk Celtics off the Pike podcast on the Ringer Network. We got two like legendary gal media people on the show today, would you say?
Yeah.
It's Brian Barrett, and then Eitan Shander is going to join us in an hour or two. We'll talk Sixers and Eagles with the Jalen Hurts contract, and he's in Philadelphia. Joining us today. So, again, Brian Barrett coming up in 15.
I mean, they cover two of the top teams.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
or the, you know, and, I mean, three teams, really, because with Shander, we're going to talk a little Eagles, too.
Little Eagles and the big-time contract for Jalen Hurts.
They've got to be feeling good.
In the movie of his life. What young actor could play Jalen Hurts in the Disney movie of Jalen Hurts? Could you get Michael B. Jordan? Could you get Michael B. Jordan? That would be cool.
I mean, you could, but, you know, is he too big time now?
That's true.
You might have to go with something smaller.
You'd have to find an unknown actor that's going to pop up. Are you interested in the George Foreman movie that's coming out?
No.
I'm not either.
No.
I'm not either. I know George Foreman's story. I'd
rather watch Creed 3.
Are the Creed movies good? I have not seen one.
I haven't seen one either.
I have not seen any.
You know what? I was watching one yesterday. It was on one of the channels that, you know, like turned the TV on. It was on, I think it was like on TBS or TNT or something, like, I don't know. And I'm looking, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to watch a little bit of it. And it was just before a fight. And I do have to say the fighting looks amazing. Like the action.
Yeah, the boxing.
Looks amazing. But it feels unrealistic.
Yeah.
Because the one little snippet that I saw, all they were doing were exchanging punches. And actually, you know, landed punches.
Right.
And I can't remember the last time I ever saw a boxing match where every single time they threw something, it landed.
Oh, no doubt, right? Exactly. Those Rocky movies are the same way. It's like,
yeah.
It's like you never see a boxing match where it's that much punching.
I'm like, if it was like this all the time, I think I'd be more into it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? It's like, sorry, you know, but I mean, there's so much defense now, and you know, it's like so much, you know, they hug each other all the time when, you know, it's like, oh, this guy landed two punches on me, I better hug him.
I have found myself in this dilemma whereas I don't want to invest time watching a movie anymore. I don't know why that is. I look for movies to watch, like if I have nothing else to do, like in an afternoon or something and whatever. And I go, oh, that's nah, I don't have time. Like I'll look and I'll go, well, it's 4 o'clock, you know, it'll be 6 when this is over. And I should be doing this and this. And I'm upset with that because I used to like watching movies. I like watching movies a lot. Now I got a lot of games on now. So it's a bad time of the year to kind of settle in to watch a movie. But even like in the afternoon when I'm done with some the stuff I need to do and I'm still got a couple hours before Lori comes home or Amberly comes home and we'll all have dinner, I still go, I'll do something else. I'll do something. And so I want to get into the Creed movies because I keep hearing how good they are. They're like, people are like, no, they're good. They're really good. I'm like, are they Rocky ripoffs? No, totally different storyline. Really good. Same kind of premise a little bit, but no, it's good. There's some nostalgic Rocky-isms in there. And you'll really enjoy it, but I have yet to dive into it.
Yeah, I mean, they're not Rocky ripoffs because, I mean, it's... I can't say it's Rocky ripoff because it's a continuation.
Yeah, but is it the same formula?
I don't know. Because
I mean,
it always seemed like
Rocky... So, you know, outside of Rocky 1, which should be could have been a standalone movie.
Right.
Everything after that is Rocky...
I mean,
overcoming something to then win in the end.
I mean, it's definitely, but that's a model for like a lot of movies, though.
Right, but let's just keep it with the Rocky thing.
Okay, I think they are. Without having seen it, I'm assuming that, you know, the first Creed, he's struggling to figure out who he is, his identity, because
he grew up without
a father.
The other ones, it's like, I fought somebody, I lost, I came back and won. Or I like in the Drago fight, I saw him kill somebody and I have to overcome my fear and I beat him. Or in Rocky 3, it's I get destroyed by Clubber Lang and I have to come back and get the Eye of the Tiger to beat him. Is it all without my coach? Yeah, is it he fights somebody, he loses, and somebody comes and saves him, or he saves himself through some sort of something and wins the fight? I don't mind the formula, but it's not going to make me run to watch it if it's a predictable sort of, yeah, this is basically, you've seen the Rocky movies, you kind of get this. It's just a new character.
Yeah, no, I imagine it's like that because I do know that Rocky's the new Mickey.
I got you right, yeah.
So, yeah. Or the new Apollo, however
you
want to
look
at it.
You know,
whichever way you want to go with it.
But, you know, you're right. I mean, all sports movies tend to be like that. You need something to overcome.
Yeah.
They've done this in movies where they've...
Well, and that's, you know, the movies based on true stories, too. Like you talked about the George Foreman movie. I saw a little snippet of it, or the trailer, and it talks about the dark days when he was going broke, and that's why he came back to fight.
Yeah,
and rebuild his name and empire. So it's like, okay, you're overcoming
something.
Selling those grills.
Man.
you had to overcome adversity, just like, right. That's...
Oh, you know where the perfect example of that is? The movie Sully, where Tom Hanks played the captain.
Yeah.
They create this movie where there was this sort of dramatic battle with the board that was looking into the landing, right? And, like, they tried to create this drama and tension that Captain Sullinger had with the people investigating the landing on the Hudson. And there was no such drama like that at all. They just basically made that up.
Right.
Because the movie needed some conflict. It couldn't just be a, Wow, he saved all those people with a heroic landing on the Hudson. He had to overcome something. He had to fight through something. And they were like, no, this didn't really happen. They were just happy he saved the day.
He wasn't brought in front of a committee and told that, hey, you could probably land at Teeter Barrel?
Yeah, exactly, right? Or did somebody plant vials of cocaine in your hotel room the night before? Like, there was all sorts of, like, ways Hollywood will go, take the truth and throw it out the window for a second. Yeah. Let's add a mess to this true story.
What about the barrage of sex workers that were in and out of his room the night before? That would keep you up and not make great decisions.
Yeah, exactly. So if they make it that Jalen Hurts was drunk in the national championship game, and that's why Tua Tagovailoa had to come in the movie, I would probably be upset.
I thought it was because he was scared, Tony.
Right, yeah, or he was scared.
It's like, I just can't do it, Coach. You should put Tua in.
Yeah, put Tua in. I can't do it.
I can't, mentally.
He
overcame the mental fatigue that came with it.
You've got fire in your belly, son. You've got fire. You've got to release it. You've got to learn. And then he comes back the next year in the SEC title game, helps Georgia win. Yeah, exactly. That's the way it's written. Because Hollywood will take a good story, and nothing makes Hollywood happier than a boring true story that they can muck up with different sort of facts and circumstances. But really, I mean, we talked about this yesterday. He's now, and this will change, obviously, but he's the highest paid player in the NFL. And what a journey it's been for him to go from, again, where he was, where he struggling enough in the national title game, where Tua comes in and saves the day with a fourth down pass into the end zone. But he stays at Alabama. He helps them win this SEC title game the next year. They lost the title game. They lost to Clemson, I believe, in the next year. So, but nevertheless, they still won the SEC title game with his help. He goes to Oklahoma. He becomes a Heisman candidate. And he wasn't drafted in the first round. His second round pick. Eagles already had a quarterback. He overcomes that when Carson Wentz sort of gets himself out of Philadelphia enough for Jalen Hurts to step in. And remember, this was a year, I mean, let's be honest, this was the year where the Philadelphia Eagles were looking to see if this was the guy. Like, if this, you know, they kind of felt like he was. They liked him enough. But this was the year, 2022 was the season that the Eagles were saying, you know, what really do we have? What do we have in a guy that is now going to be the lead quarterback of this team? And he had an MVP season and led him to the Super Bowl. And now he's rewarded with the highest paid contract annual salary of anybody who has ever played in the National Football League at any time. And so it's a great story. And again, somebody's going to come along and eclipse it. Somebody soon is going to get $52 million a year, $53 million a year. But for right now, he's the money king of the NFL. And it's just life delivers you obstacles. You overcome the obstacles and you have no idea where they go. Sometimes you overcome obstacles and nothing changes. Sometimes you overcome obstacles and your world changes. And in Jalen Hurts' case, he overcame a major obstacle that could have derailed a lot of young people. As impressionable as young people are, you're kind of you're figuring out your place in this world, right? You are a young man and you're getting thrusted into adulthood rather quickly. And in the world of college athletics, you're absolutely thrusted into a world you're not prepared for. No matter how big of a star you were in high school, you can't begin to understand the national scrutiny and the national attention that you can get as a student athlete. To be on its biggest stage, to fail on its biggest stage, and still remain and keep your composure enough to say, I'm going to come back from this and I'm going to be a better player. It's a great story for Jalen Hurts.
This is Wake Up Call. SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Let's get to our Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call them for a quote at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or go online at progressive.com All right, Brian Barrett joins us. A very busy Brian Barrett, because Boston's always busy this time of year. How are you, my friend?
Tony, I'm doing well, man. I cannot complain. The Bruins just set a record. They won game one, and the Celtics are making Trae Young look pretty bad right now. They're really embarrassing that guy, so it's a good time right now.
Off the Pike podcast on the Ringer Networks, Brian Barrett joining us to talk about the Celtics. 57 wins this year, a 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. Brian, let's go back to the beginning of the season with the Joe Mazzulla gets the job after the Ime Udoka scandal. And I know it's a broad question, but how much of this team looks like what Ime Udoka had started last year in an Eastern Conference run, and how much of the Joe Mazzulla's presence do you see in this team this year?
Well, it's finally back to where Ime had this team defensively. And I know you could look at the opponent and say, well, they're going up against the Atlanta Hawks. That's why they're dominating defensively. But if you look at Atlanta's offensive rating in that game on Tuesday night, it was a 105, which is almost 3.5 points worse than the worst offense in the NBA. They had 12 shot blocks. So they are looking like the defense that we saw from Ime. The other thing I'd say about that, too, is if you go back to the final 10 games of the season, they had the best defense in the NBA. So they finally got back to that. Their defense had not been great, even though it finished number 2 in the NBA. I know this sounds like tough to say, but they weren't at the same level they were a year ago. Part of that was Marcus Smart did not look the same, and they were, of course, missing Robert Williams. So they finally looked the same defensively. And then offensively, they've taken a step forward under Joe Mazzulla. He's obviously emphasized taking more threes. Now, that's been different in this series because it's been a layup line. The Hawks are trying to run them off the three-point line, but I think a lot of that comes back to Mazzulla. I mean, one of the things is Al Horford was number 2 in the NBA this season in terms of a three-point shooter, and they've used him a lot more as a spot-up guy. I mean, his percentages as a spot-up shooter are like 10 percentage points higher than they were a season ago, and that's opened up the court for guys like Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So it's just a little alteration that he's made from an offensive perspective where Al's used more as a spacer. He's not really used as a screener, where I give Joe Mazzulla a ton of credit where it comes to that. And the other thing he's done, Tony, and maybe this is the most important development on the Celtics other than Robert Williams himself, is he has instilled a lot of confidence in Derek White. Derek White was in the doghouse, not in the doghouse, but Ime would bench him when he was not shooting the ball well. He didn't have confidence in that playoff run last year. I mean, this guy was 1-for-10 in a game 7. He had 3 points in 2 games. I mean, he could not shoot at all. And this year, he's turned into a really good 3-point shooter. And you could argue, outside of Jason Tatum, he's been the best player in the series. And a lot of that has to do with Joe Mazzulla saying, hey, keep shooting, stay confident. What that resulted in, he shot north of 38% from 3-point territory this season, and he's shooting 50% in the series.
When keeping on that theme, last year, one of the things that we sort of were, in, at least I was, looking at the Celtics is how they reacted to this new coach in Ime Udoka and how they responded to this coach, how they seemed to have bought into this coach. But then they make a run. They win the Eastern Conference, and they go to the finals. And I know they're professionals, and I know in the end their job is to play professional basketball. But how much concern was there that even if you have a familiar guy in Joe Mazzulla, that there is going to be enough discord here to sort of ruin a momentum that was sort of generated by a new voice in Ime Udoka?
No, you're 100% right on that. There was a ton of concerns. There was concerns, Tony, as recently as a couple of days ago, and I'm not sure we're going to be 100% confident in Joe going forward, because Ime was so good for this team, and he obviously changed the trajectory of what they were defensively. And the other thing I would point out is, and this is a good thing that's happened over the past 2 games, Derek White played 34 minutes in this game on Tuesday night, 2 more than Marcus Smart. What had been going on, and one of the things that we were wondering as Celtics fans is, hey, is Joe Mazzulla actually going to play Derek White in closing minutes? There were games this season where Derek White was not playing in the fourth quarter. Like, there was a game against Utah a couple of weeks ago that the Celtics lost inexplicably, a game they needed, and Derek White's sitting on the bench. And you're thinking to yourself, this guy has legitimately been the third best player on the Celtics this season behind Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, yet he was always favoring Marcus Smart because of the history with the organization. He's the longest tenured Celtic, all that different type of stuff. But now the good sign is Mazzulla is playing Derek White down the stretch. It's almost like the Utah game and some of these other games this season that Derek White did not close was almost a wake-up call for Joe Mazzulla, and that's one of the big concerns we had. The other concern we had is, hey, is he going to be willing to be pliable and versatile with his lineup? Well, guess what he has? I mean, Grant Williams, who has been bad down the stretch of the season, he's been dealing with this elbow thing, but since the beginning of February, he's a below-average three-point shooter, shooting about 35%. Guess what? He's not playing in the series. Sam Hauser has taken his minutes. Not that Hauser's been great, but the ability to say to a veteran guy, and look, Mazzulla's 34. He wasn't even on the front line of the bench last year. He's sitting behind the bench, Tony. He wasn't even one of the main assistants. And now he's willing to put Grant Williams, the guy that was looking for $20 million per season, on the bench. And this is the guy they're going to need later on if they go up against Giannis, because that's the one thing he does really well is guard Giannis. So I think the first two games of this series have been encouraging if you are worried about Joe Mazzulla.
I get the seven-game series are totally different than when you play a team in the regular season. Sometimes you catch them on the back end of a road trip, or there's injuries and certain players don't play. But they're 5-2 against both Philadelphia and Milwaukee combined. Is that something to hold on to this postseason?
Oh, yeah, it's massive for a couple of reasons. The first one is the Bucks have nobody to cover the wings of the Celtics. Like, they do not have good wing defenders. We're talking about the Wesley Matthews of the world. We're talking about the Joe Ingles of the world. That's the real weakness of Milwaukee, and we saw it in that matchup. And I know it's a regular season game, but the Celtics went in there, and they beat him by 40-plus points because they have nobody to deal with Tatum. And we saw when Tatum had his shot going in that series against Milwaukee, there's no answer because he's just walking into wide-open jump shots. And with Philadelphia, it's the same thing. I mean, now the Embiid factor is obviously scary, just like the Giannis factor is scary, but they don't have good wing defenders. I mean, they got this guy McDaniels from Charlotte, who Tatum lit up twice this year when he was on Charlotte. That's their answer to cover Jason Tatum. And if that's the case, who are you putting on Jaylen Brown? So they just say, from a matchup perspective, the Celtics are more athletic than both those teams, and they don't have good wing defenders. And the other component to that is they have multiple guys to throw at Harden. You're talking about Smart, and you're talking about Derek White, and you could say the same thing about a Milwaukee series where they have two guys to throw at Giannis, Al Horford, and of course Grant Williams, who I just mentioned. And look, you're never going to stop Giannis, but the Celtics slowed him down in that series last year. They made him work for it. So they match up well with both those teams. The one concern I have right now is Jaylen Brown, like this hand situation. They say he didn't take himself out of the game last night, but he clearly did. I know the coach said he did. He clearly did. I wonder, Tony, I mean, this Atlanta team, they stink. Their strategy has been absolutely atrocious. I would consider sitting them on Friday. And if you go up 3-0, maybe you wait until the next series to play them, because clearly this thing is bothering them.
How much is the, you brought up the three-point shot. How much of this is the Celtics offense? They've got so many good three-point shooters. They're one of the better three-point shooting teams in the NBA. How much of it is the core of this offense, and how much of it is utilized?
Well, it's a massive part of it. The Celtics, 48% of their shot attempts come from three-point territory, right? That's the second highest rate in the NBA. But what Atlanta has decided to do is they've said, hey, we're just going to run these guys off the three-point line. We're not going to let them shoot threes. Part of that is Al Horford. So what's happening is they're not cheating off Al. So Al is just taking the big guy, Clint Capella, and he's staying out there in the wing. And the problem is the Hawks' on-ball defense is not bad, so it's a layup line. So the Celtics only took 33 threes last night. Now they hit 15 of them. But they also took 31 attempts in the restricted area, okay? And that would be tied for the league best this year in terms of attempts. They shot 74.2%. No team shot more than 72% this season. They scored 64 points in the paint, which would be better than the league's best. Memphis was over 58 this year, which is the best. 64 points in the paint is the most in the history of the Celtics organization in the postseason. So the three-point shooting of the Celtics has freaked out to the Hawks to the point where they've completely altered their defense. And now what's happening is the Celtics have a layup line. It's embarrassing from a Hawks perspective. I thought Quinn Snyder was a good coach. Now, I'd have no idea why he'd take this job when there could be a bunch of jobs opening up, and he seemed like the number one free agent. But his strategy is flat-out baffling. I mean, really, it's malpractice.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. There is just nothing Atlanta has for this Celtics team. Again, 57 wins for Boston this year, number two seed, and a very, very strong Celtics team getting into this as we get deeper in those playoffs. Brian Barrett, Off the Pike podcast on The Ringer. Really good talking to you, my friend. Always good catching up. And I guarantee you we'll be doing it again because there's something brewing in Boston all the time.
Sounds good, Tony. Have a good one, my friend.
You got it, my friend. Brian Barrett, again, Off the Pike podcast at The Ringer on the Celtics. He's right, man. Good three-point shooting team, better defensive team. And again, they dealt with the Ime Udoka situation. And I know we made a big deal of it because it was a big story. It was a story that didn't really come to what we thought it was going to be, right? I mean, Ime Udoka had this inappropriate relationship, and there were people who were all on media trying to get some clicks, trying to get some attention, that were trying to say, oh, when I've heard from people, this is going to be massive. This is going to be massive. It never turned into that. He'll never, ever be a coach in the NBA again based on what we're hearing. Well, he's already up for a job. He's already up for a couple of jobs. But Joe Mazzulla took over a team that went to the Eastern Conference Final under the system of Ime Udoka, and they want to keep that obviously flowing and keep that going. and they win 57 games. And at one point, they started the season 21-5. And Atlanta, like you said, nothing.